The gospel passage for today from the 12th chapter of Mark's gospel. Jesus has been making his way toward Jerusalem. And then one of the scribes came near and heard them disputing with one another, and seeing that Jesus answered them well, the scribe asked Jesus, "Which commandment is the first of all?" Jesus answered, "The first is, 'Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength. The second is this, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. There is no other commandment greater than these.' Then the scribe said to him, 'You are right, teacher. You have truly said that he is one, and besides him there is no other. And to love him with all the heart and with all the understanding and with all the strength, and to love one's neighbor as oneself, this is much more important than all whole burnt offerings and sacrifices.' When Jesus saw that he answered wisely, he said to him, 'You are not far from the kingdom of God.' After that, no one dared to ask him any question." This too is for us the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. It's not as popular as it once was, but every so often a couple will come to me and ask that I read this passage from Ruth at their wedding. It's those lovely lines wherein Ruth, the heroine of the story, says, "Where you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God." It's just the sort of passage that is perfect for a wedding, as long as you don't know much about the context. Because, as you already know, these are not the vows a bride makes to her husband-to-be, but rather they are the promises one woman makes to another, a daughter-in-law makes to her mother-in-law. Now, many of us, myself included, have been blessed to receive great mothers-in-law by way of marriage, but I think few of us would be ready to make these sorts of declarations of undying love and affection to these marvelous women. And yet herein is the power of what? And we will talk about that today. But since this isn't a wedding, we have the luxury of getting to explore the context a bit more. The book of Ruth, as you have heard, tells the story of the family of a man named Elimelech and his wife Naomi and their two sons, Mahlon and Chilion. They came from the town of Bethlehem in the land of the tribe of Judah. This, recall, is in the time of the Judges, where in the Old Testament the kingdom of Israel has not yet been established. Israel still exists as 12 relatively independent tribes, and Judah is among the very smallest of the tribes. Now, Elimelech and Naomi and Mahlon and Chilion were probably your typical Israelite family of four, hard-working, synagogue-going kind of folks, the kind of people whose picture you would find in the Olin Mills Church Pictorial Directory, and you would say, "Oh, what a beautiful family." The problem is that there was a famine in Bethlehem, which is ironic because Bethlehem in Hebrew means house of food. So when they got there, the cupboard was bare. So Elimelech and Naomi decide that it is time to move, to go in search of food. So they moved their family to the neighboring country of Moab. Now, the good thing about Moab was the ready availability of food. The bad thing about Moab is that its residents were the enemies of Israel. Israelites and Moabites fought each other constantly. And the other drawback, at least as far as good Israelites were concerned, is that the Moabites were polytheists. They worshipped a number of gods, whereas Israelites, of course, worship only the one God. But doctrinal purity and theological concerns can take a backseat to practical ones when you have a family to feed. Now, at some point, Elimelech died in Moab, leaving Naomi with her two sons, who both married local girls, one named Orpah, the other named Ruth. Now, just to show you the power of one, You switch one letter in the first daughter-in-law's name, and we would all be watching the Oprah Winfrey Show, but, well, someone made a spelling mistake, and the rest, as they say, is history. Now, normally, this sort of marrying outside the faith would have been considered taboo, but again, doctrinal purity and theological concerns can take a backseat to practical ones when you have a family to create. And so, after living in Moab for about 10 years, both Mahlon and Kilian died, leaving Naomi without men in her life. And that meant there was no one to earn a living, no one to continue the family line, no one to secure either Naomi's present or her future. With no life insurance settlement, no social security check to support her, Naomi decided she would do best to return home, to go back to Bethlehem, and she took her two daughters-in-law with her. But they didn't get very far before Naomi started to plead with them to turn back, to go home, to go back to Moab, to their own families, to their mothers' homes. If they did that, Naomi reasoned, they could have a second shot at life. They could still marry. They might have the children that her own sons could not provide them. Go, she said to Orpah repeatedly, go your way, turn back, try again. I have nothing to offer you but a life of bitterness and desolation. May God show you the same kindness, the same loving kindness, the same sort of loyalty and fidelity that you have shown to the dead and to me. As you would imagine, there was a lot of crying, a lot of tears, and after much weeping, Orpah saw the virtue in her mother-in-law's advice. So she turned around and went home. But Ruth wouldn't budge. We're told she clung to her mother-in-law the same way that a man clings to his wife and the two become one flesh. And Ruth uttered those lines which have been made famous by weddings. Where you go, she said to Naomi, I will go. And where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people, my people. Your God, my God. I'm in it till death do us part. What leads a person to make that kind of commitment, I wonder? When there would be something sure, a bird in the hand, as it were, to go back home, to start again, to have a new life, with a high degree of confidence that one could be successful. But Ruth chooses the less obvious path. Ruth chooses the less obvious future. Ruth stakes her claim on life with a mother-in-law whom she has grown to love. What makes a person make this kind of commitment? I think it must be the power of one. And the one I have in mind could be another person. It only takes one person to change our lives, whether that one person is a parent, or a teacher, or a mentor, or a coach, or a spouse, or even a mother-in-law. It took one woman who refused to give up her seat on a bus and one man with a dream to change segregation in this country. It took one man with a firm conviction that we are all saved by grace who nailed 95 theological ideas to a church door to change the church. It took one man willing to challenge Pharaoh to bring God's people out of slavery in Egypt to freedom. It took one young woman saying yes to God to bring salvation to the earth. Rosa Parks, Martin Luther King Jr., his namesake Martin Luther, Mary, the mother of Jesus, are all saints whose decisions and lives changed history. They represent for us the power of one. But the one I have in mind, the power of one who changed Ruth's life, is the God in whom Israel believed, the one God that Israel confessed. Before she met the family of Elimelech, Ruth had worshipped the gods of Moab, her homeland, or perhaps at least its chief deity, a god named Chemosh. But somewhere along the line, she learned of the god of her husband's family. She learned to worship the god her husband's family worshipped, the one whom they said had created the heavens and the earth as an act of love, a God who loved all that God had made. Ruth learned somewhere along the line about a God who made a covenant with Abraham and promised through Abraham to bless all of the families of the earth. Somewhere along the line, Ruth learned of a God who rescued God's children from their slavery in Egypt. Maybe Naomi had spoken to Orpah and Ruth of this God as they went to the well for water, explaining how this God had parted the waters first of a sea and then of a river to bring God's children into the land that God had promised. Or perhaps Naomi told the story of how God provided bread from heaven as God's children wandered in search of that promised land while together the women prepared bread for the day. It could be that Ruth learned something of this God as her family by marriage prayed each day, "The Lord our God is one. The Lord our God is God alone. And you shall love the Lord your God with all of your heart and with all of your soul and with all of your might." Well, no matter how she learned of it or from whom she heard it, Ruth came to believe in this one God and in his power to change her life. So rather than going home, instead of turning around, opting not to return to her home and family with a good chance for happiness, Ruth elected to stay with Naomi, whose people had become her people, whose God was already her God. Somewhere along the line, Ruth must have learned of this God's covenant loyalty, promising to be God of Israel through every generation. Somewhere along the line, Ruth must have learned of God's unwillingness to abandon us, even when life is hardest, when we lose those we love, or lose every visible means of support. God is unwilling to abandon us even in the face of tragedy and loss and suffering. Someone, somewhere along the line, must have told Ruth of God's faithful kindness, that unbreakable love that means that God will never leave us or forsake us. Somehow, Ruth knew that God can be counted on to be with us and for us in every possible circumstance of life. Something had convinced Ruth that God is not committed to us because it is in God's best interest or for any other good reason. Rather, God is committed to us because, well, because that's the way God is. And so Ruth believed, and you and I can believe, in the power of one.